Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Michael Medved, and there are lots of tours of Israel that are on offer that will show you the Holy Land, but they often ignore the modern state of Israel and the way that Israelis really live their lives. And then there are other tours that will emphasize the modern state of Israel and Zionist history, but they won't emphasize the Holy Land capacity. We're covering everything from the latest high tech to the most ancient archaeology in our tour to Israel with Discovery Institute. I'm going to be leading that tour personally with George Gilder. Yep, the great George Gilder on technology, and Stephen Meyer on science, myself on the history of Israel and its country and culture. Join us through Discovery Institute at discovery.org/Israel2019. That's discovery.org/Israel2019.
Hello, this is David Klinghoffer, a senior fellow with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Recently, we brought you part one of a conversation on the Dennis Prager Show between the show's host and our friend Stephen Meyer. Today, we bring you the second and final part of that very interesting interview. As Prager explains, it was Meyer's work that led Prager to become an evolution skeptic. But here's the key point. It was the science, not the religion, that moved Prager. What impressed him was not theological objections. It was the fact that the field of evolution is in turmoil, a reality that the media largely conceal from the public, as Meyer has made clear in his books. We join the conversation at its halfway point.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. I'm Dennis Prager. The third hour of my show every Tuesday is on some great issue. Can't get greater than evolution and God, and you can't get a greater spokesman on this. There are many wonderful ones, but you can't get a greater one than Stephen Meyer, whose books are truly seminal in this arena. The Signature of the Cell, is that
correct? Signature in the Cell.
Signature in the Cell. And what is the other one?
Darwin's Doubt.
Darwin's Doubt. And now he has edited a collection of essays, and the title sounds very academic, but it is not. Theistic Evolution. In other words, is there a God who directed evolution, as it were? And this is a critique of that, a series of essays. The book, again, Theistic Evolution, it's up at DennisPrager.com. So go ahead.
Well, Dennis, maybe I could say one thing about just that issue of is there a God who directed evolution? It's
yeah.
really important to understand that in the Darwinian frame of reference, the Darwinian schema, that evolution is a completely undirected process. That's why there's an emphasis on natural selection. Darwin developed the concept of natural selection in contrast to what human breeders can do to select certain traits to make sheep woolier over time or pigeons, dog breeding, where we select traits that we want to see amplified over time. What Darwin argued was that changes in the environment could accomplish the same end, and so that instead of there being artificial or intelligent selection, nature could do the selecting. So one of the odd things about theists who want to synthesize evolution with belief in some sort of divine creation or guidance of the process by which things have come to be is that they're trying to synthesize they're trying to say that God is directing an inherently undirected mechanism. And that presents a logical problem, irrespective of the scientific problems that we were talking about, namely that the
right.
mutation
okay.
selection mechanism lacks creative power. So it's also very odd.
It's God or evolution. It's not – you can't have God and evolution because definitional to evolution is random.
It random and undirected in the sense that nature is doing the selecting, not an intelligent agent. And of course, there are other meanings of evolution, like the simple meaning change over time or microevolutionary change with the finch beaks and the peppered moths, things that no one disputes. But the main mechanism of macroevolution is understood in both modern and classical Darwinism as a completely undirected process. And that's why there's a kind of a logical problem for theistic evolution. Can God direct an undirected process? Well, no, even God can't direct an undirected process. If he does, it's no longer undirected.
So the argument I get from this guy at my workout studio who's an atheist is that, you know, this How could science argue for the non-material? That's
science.
That's right. He's the guy. So, if you sneeze, he says science.
Oh, I see.
So okay. We made this.
Somewhat
of a joke. But so his argument is, how could you, you want to believe in God? Go right ahead. That's fine. But you can't use science to argue for God because science can only talk about that which is material.
Well, actually, that's an artificial restriction on the scientific method. And we, and point one, point two is that we actually infer the activity of mind all the time. We do it in our ordinary experience. If you're an insurance fraud detector and you determine that somebody was manipulating circumstances, you've inferred the activity of mind. If you're a forensic scientist, if you're an archaeologist and you look at the Rosetta Stone, you don't say, gee, isn't it wonderful what wind and erosion did to produce those information-rich inscriptions. You recognize that there was a mind behind it. So the theory of intelligent...
That's a good one.
The theory of intelligent design is developing...
Right, DNA is a Rosetta Stone.
It is an information-rich system. And what we know from our uniform and repeated experience, which according to Darwin, by the way, is the basis of all scientific reasoning about the past, what we know from our uniform and repeated experience is that information always comes from an intelligent agent, from a mind, whether we're looking at the Rosetta Stone, computer code.
Right, that's a scientific
fact.
That's
a scientific inference. That's a scientific connection, an inference. Yeah.
My guest is Stephen Meyer. Stephen, M-E-Y-E-R. Any of his books will be mind opening for you, and he writes as clearly as he speaks. The latest is his editing of Theistic Evolution, a critique of it. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour.
God gave me everything I want.
Well, as any of you who know me know, this is about as wonderful as it gets for me. To talk about the ultimate creation by a creator and using reason to get there, only reason. That's why, of course, my own book is called The Rational Bible. I think that God gave us reason and we should use it. That's what Stephen Meyer embodies, PhD in the philosophy of science from Cambridge. Director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle. Latest book, collection of essays, a critique of theistic evolution, called Theistic Evolution. But you must get his previous two books. That's critical. Signature in the Cell and...
Darwin's Doubt,
yes.
Thank you for the plug, Dennis.
Many plugs, because you deserve them. They're in very, very important works. I want to go to another thing now. I had Lawrence Krauss. Yeah, I had Lawrence Krauss on the show for an hour on this, who wrote this. What was the title of his book? Something from Nothing?
The Universe from Nothing.
So, obviously, I'm not going to knock anything he said. He's not here. But I remember there was a moment when he said, well, because I said, look, I don't have anywhere near scientific knowledge, but I think clearly and logically. You're claiming we get something from nothing and that is inherently not possible. And then he said, well, it depends on your definition of nothing. And that's when I gave up. I said, Professor, nothing means no thing. I mean, was I wrong? I mean, is nothing nothing?
As a matter of logic, you're absolutely right. What Professor Krauss is talking about is a theory of cosmology, or a cosmological model known as quantum cosmology, in which the universe is thought to emerge out of the laws of quantum physics.
Right. So he said that, and right. I asked him, where did the laws come from?
Right. And there's some other things we could ask about those laws. First of all, laws of physics do not produce matter. They describe the interactions between matter. So
that's a good one.
Big category mistake. Okay, so the law of momentum exchange describes how billiard ball A knocks into billiard ball B if you've got billiard balls. It doesn't. It describes the interaction between pre-existing matter. That's one problem. Another problem is that this quantum cosmology, it's pretty heady stuff, but it's based on some of the phenomena in quantum physics, the physics of the very weird when things are very small. And it is basically a probabilistic law. And it's created, the law itself is something we're not sure if it's really true or not, but it's been generated by an analogy to known quantum physical processes where particles connect like waves and waves connect like particles, and the probability of the particle being in any one place is defined by this law of quantum mechanics, or this equation, the Schrodinger equation. Well, they've tried to use that same kind of math to say, well, maybe there's a whole bunch of different – there's an equation that can describe all the different possible universes that could exist.
Okay, right. The multiverse. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get to that in one moment. They have another thing too. The Big Bang disturbed them. And the astronomers.
That's what this is all about, to circumvent the implications of the Big Bang.
Right, because it means there was a beginning and matter wasn't always here, but God was always here, and this drives them crazy. Okay, so how do you answer, they now argue the Big Bangs will go on indefinitely and have gone on indefinitely.
That's a different cosmological model, but
I know that.
Yeah. Let's finish the thing with the quantum cosmology.
Fair enough.
It's really interesting.
Okay.
Because what they basically want is they want a mathematical equation to explain where our universe comes from. If our universe can be shown to be a reasonably probable outcome of what they call the quantum wave equation, or the quantum wave function, then they think they will have explained the universe. But one of the more astute proponents of quantum cosmology, Alexander Vilenkin, has said, well, wait a minute. We're saying that math is basically producing a material universe, but he says math is something that exists in a mind. Are we therefore saying that to the material universe, there's actually a mind? And that's not a very congenial conclusion, because this is basically a materialistically inspired cosmology. The other thing that's really strange is that in order to solve the equation that gives you a universal wave function out of which our universe might be a reasonably probable outcome, the theoretical physicist has to impose what are called boundary constraints on the degrees of mathematical freedom of this equation, which is actually imparting information into the math to get the outcome they want. So they're actually modeling the need, an unexplained infusion of information to get the universe. So even if you could get matter out of math, you still can't get the information needed to produce the universe.
Well, anyway, you can't get matter out of math.
Okay, in the beginning was the word.
So go on the Big Bang.
Yeah. So there's a number of these materialistic cosmologies that are trying to circumvent the clear and obvious implication of the Big Bang, which is that the universe, the material universe, the physical universe, had a definite beginning in time, space, matter, and energy. Hawking and Penrose proved this with something called the singularity theorem in the late 60s. There's been an additional proof of this called the Bohr-Guth-Vilenkin theorem. And the physicists and cosmologists have been going crazy trying to try to find a way to circumvent this conclusion. Hawking himself worked on circumventing his own proof. He was the originator of this quantum cosmological idea that Krauss has popularized. But it doesn't really work for the reasons I've specified. And then there's another version of this where they want – it's called the inflationary cosmology, where we have one Big Bang after another Big Bang after another Big Bang. It was mainly designed to circumvent the problem of the fine-tuning of the universe. But what the odd – irony of that whole effort is that the mechanism by which you would get the multiple Big Bangs itself has to be exquisitely fine-tuned to tend to the...
Anyway, there's no evidence for it.
And there's no evidence. These are entirely speculative cosmological models.
Yes, that and the multiverse are far greater leaps of faith than we who believe in God make.
Right. I gave a talk on this the other night here in Southern California, and remember the thing from Alice in Wonderland's Six Impossible Things Before Breakfast?
You know, yeah.
Well, these naturalistic cosmologies force you to posit multiple abstract explanatory entities, inflaton fields, inflaton shutoff energies, strings, multi-dimensions of space to explain the very thing that one God would explain
simply.
Let's
get an inflaton energy field for the next show.
Be a picture that I can see.
I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. He is so good, Dr. Stephen Meyer, my guest, that I have an idea. I'm going to have you on again just to take challenges. Specifically on evolution and intelligent design. I think it would be terrific. It would be good for my listeners, be good for me, be good for you. Well, I don't know if it's good for you.
Always good to be put through your paces.
Right,
absolutely.
But you'll be working so hard. I'll just be moderating. Dr. Stephen Meyer is a PhD in the philosophy of science, so you have to know both science and philosophy. This is not a philosophy course. You better know your science to get that PhD. Director of Science for Director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute of Seattle. Discovery Institute of Seattle is scientists who believe in intelligent design. It is amazing to me. I am just amazed at the mockery of the concept that there might be a mind behind the mind. The world is made by information, but the information was not given by an information giver. Why that is considered more rational than the idea that information comes from information. Your Rosetta Stone is perfect. Why not say the wind blew letters onto this stone?
There are so many examples of rational agents detecting the activity of other rational agents and the effects that the rational agents leave behind. Think of the sculptures at Mount Rushmore. No one would say that was the product of wind and erosion. Anytime we encounter informational text, digital code, hieroglyphic inscriptions, we immediately infer the prior activity of mind because of what we know from our uniform and repeated experience, which is the basis of all scientific reasoning.
Right.
One of the ironies of my two previous books is that I self-consciously used the method of scientific reasoning that Darwin himself pioneered to investigate causes in the remote past. And one of his principles was that if you're going to explain an event in the remote past, you should look for a cause now in operation, or what he called a vera causa in the Latin, a true cause, a cause known to produce the effect you're trying to explain. And when I started thinking about that deeply in respect to the question of the origin of information, I thought, well, what do we know about the origin of information? It always comes from a mind.
Right. Next time I have another agenda with you, and I know what I know the question I'm going to open up with. All right, we know you believe in God. Do you love God?
We've discussed this at dinner, have we not?
I thought it was at dinner. We didn't have a couple of million people tuning in. Stephen Meyer's latest book, Theistic Evolution, but look for all his books. I'm Dennis Prager.
The Dennis Prager Show, live from the Relief Factor pain-free studio.
That was the second half of Dennis Prager and Stephen Meyer on The Dennis Prager Show by the kind courtesy of the subscription service Pragertopia. For more outstanding audio, video, and articles, go to DennisPrager.com. You can find Stephen Meyer's books and articles at StephenCMeyer.org. For ID the Future, this is David Klinghoffer. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.